Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and I'm here with you every Saturday at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I've been a health journalist and a green journalist for over 20 years. I write on the Huffington Post and at healthjournalistblog.com, covering the connection between our personal health and everything that's going on in our society and our environment, because the two are intimately connected. It's all connected. We too often treat personal health as just something, you know, if we eat the right diet and get enough exercise, that's something that we like to think is in our control. But there are a whole bunch of different kinds of societal inputs into our food, into our water, into the products we use, into the sanity of the society that we live in, that also impact our health. And that's what we discuss on this show. Today, I have a really terrific guest for you that we've been trying to get on the program for a while. I'm so happy to have him here. And before I bring him on, I'm just going to preface his conversation with me today with a little prelude, as I often do on the show, where I talk about upcoming actions and social actions and activist actions and things that we each can do and that we all need to do together to safeguard our health and the health of our society. I actually just came to record the show today from a city council meeting in downtown New York, New York, and it was to discuss some new regulations or guidelines that have been issued by the Department of Environmental Preservation of New York City. And they are revising their guidelines in relation to the prospect of fracking coming to New York State. And many people were surprised that the DEP, which is really charged with only the task of protecting the water supply and the water infrastructures, which are all upstate, coming down from reservoirs upstate and all the way down to the city, are preserved, protected, and that our unfiltered water supply is safe. And surprise, surprise, many people speaking there were very surprised that they have taken a step back from the original safety regulations that they were recommending in their original report in order to make it easier to compromise with industry, which is what the state government wants. Now, I've reported a lot on fracking and its threat to New York's water, food, and air, but this recent development is very interesting for anyone in the Northeast region to be thinking about as I talk today with my guest, and you'll soon see why, and we'll be kind of referencing this a little bit about the show, because he is an expert on how the handshake between government and certain industries really has moved the bar far, far away from what we would hope would be the case for both personal health, for safety, for economic health, and for environmental health and safety. And my guest today is none other than Greg Palast, who is really the dean of investigative journalists of our time. I'm so honored to have him on the show today with me to discuss his new book, Vulture's Picnic. Welcome, Greg.
Glad to be with you, Allison. I'm honored.
It's so terrific to have you here. And, you know, I have been reading the book with great enjoyment because, actually, it's kind of like if New York is about to have a bad case of the flu in the form of the advent of these gas and oil industries, these are industries that you have been following and studying and finding out a lot about, for the last decade and have some real deep dish information on. And that's what you cover in your book. So, you know, people maybe weren't paying attention when Katrina happened, which you cover. They maybe weren't paying such close attention after the Gulf oil spill happened, which you also cover. Then when Fukushima happened, which we now are coming upon our first year anniversary, that kind of got swept under the rug, and you cover that too. It seems like you're always there. So, you know, what is the, one of the questions that came up in the city council today was somebody said, well, in making any kind of plan, we have to take into account how the gas and oil industry functions. We can't say we should do this or we could do that without understanding how they are likely to respond and how cooperative they may be willing to be. So, Greg, tell us about it. How how willing are they to really take public health and well-being into account in what you found and what you detail in Vulture's Picnic?
Well, they're more willing. They're quite willing to bet your life, to go double or nothing on your health and safety. I mean, one of the stories in Vulture's Picnic, you know, I do old-fashioned investigative reporting, and usually for BBC television.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a story of my investigations, in especially into the oil and energy industries. And you know, in the case of fracking, for example,
mm-hmm.
I've been investigating these characters, this industry, for a long time, and it's not very pretty. In the case of fracking, in the book, there's a chapter called "Pig in the Pipeline." And this should give people real pause. While a lot of people have been talking about fracking, by the way, if you've been under a rock and don't know what that is, that's oil and gas companies now drill sideways for many miles, and they blow holes through that sideways pipe underground and shove sand, water, and then a bunch of chemicals into the underground, and when that happens, they're fracturing the rock. Of course, the rock can fracture, and those chemicals end up in our water supply, and that's where you see things like in the film Gasland, where you can light the water coming out of your pipe. So there is a tremendous danger of toxic poisoning of our water systems through fracking. What hasn't been looked at, which I've investigated, that you got to move the pipes somewhere, and you just were in the city council hearings about piping this new gas from upstate New York into New York City. Well, look out, because pipes have been exploding all over America, exploding, leaking, poisoning systems, burning people to death. What's going on here? And I investigated in Vulture's Picnic. What I found is pretty darn chilling. Every pipe has a pig in it, and not just, you know, the bonus bloated oil company executive that gets sucked in once in a while. I'm talking about a pig is a robot, a pipeline inspection gauge, but it looks like a big barrel, a big giant barrel or tube or a pig robot, and it goes through the pipe with the oil and with the gas, and it beeps and boots and tells us when there's something wrong, corrosion, cracking, breaking, overpressure, something that's going to make the pipe explode or leak. And the thing, what I found out from insiders in the industry who were really scared to death about giving me this information, it's a nasty place to industry to work in. And what they told me, what the insiders told me, is that the pigs have been silenced. That is, what it is that these pigs, these robots going through the lines that are supposed to keep us safe and tell us when something is wrong, they send out signals, beeps, boops, and then they squeal when something is wrong, when there's a crack or something. And they've been dialed down. The software that decodes these beeps and boops has been mucked with and dialed down so that they are not as sensitive as they should be. It's kind of like taking the batteries out of your smoke detector, which is okay as long as you don't actually have a fire in your kid's room. Well, if you dial down the pig and there's a problem, it's going to lead to an explosion. You say, well, why would companies allow something that will lead to explosions, to massive multi-million dollar destructive, you know, cracks and stuff where they have to pay millions of dollars? Because in the end, it's cheaper for them. Like in California, we just had a pipeline blow up and burn 8 people. It's cheaper to buy the coffins and pay off the families, say, $4 million each, which is typical in these cases. So they had to pay, say, $32 million. That's nothing compared to rerouting a pipeline when the pig starts squealing. That's $200 million. So it's a lot cheaper to just make sure that the pipes, that they don't have to replace the pipes or fix them. And then once in a while they'll blow or they'll crack and they'll destroy the aquifers or the water supplies. In Chicago, I was in one investigation where I had the internal company documents. They knew that the pipes were going to go. 18 people were burnt alive when the gas pipes blew out. We're going to start running pipes into New York. It's just utterly insane to create a whole new network. We're going to probably have to create 10,000 miles of a web of piping in New York. We have to depend on these pigs, and I don't mean the robot pigs. I mean the corporate pigs that knew this stuff, that knew that the pipeline robots have been jacked with.
And they are required. See, here's what happens. They are required to conform to, this is our safety plan, this is what we're doing, and then they just simply dial it off and they don't do it. So that's what you detail in Vulture's Picnic. I mean, right now what they're saying is that the drilling could be creating seismic activity, it could be opening up fault lines, and it could actually destabilize the water infrastructures that supply water to New York City. And they actually sat there, these Department of Environmental Protection folks sat there at this meeting, and they said with a straight face, if one of our water sources, upstate reservoirs, goes down, we could, you know, for a brief amount of time, tolerate a backup. But someone else pointed out, this is billions of dollars of infrastructure that could go down. This is an agreement with the federal government that we are exempted from providing filtration, that, and it could be adulterated, and then suddenly billions of dollars have to be come up with to provide filtration. And who's going to pay for that? I mean, someone was saying, oh, well, maybe there'll be a bond and we'll get them to pay for it. At the end of the day, do they usually pay? Do they usually pony up if they create, let's say, billions of dollars of infrastructural damage to the water supply of New York City?
Yeah, well, if you read if you don't want the answer, then don't read Vulture's Picnic, because one of the things that I investigate, for example, the Deepwater Horizon, but as I noted in there, when I saw that thing go up, and everyone said, oh, BP, aren't they the green? BP was considered, even by environmental groups like Sierra Club and others, were praising NRDC, were praising BP as the green oil company. They painted their gas stations green. How could they do something like this, like let this happen, the Deepwater Horizon explosion in the Gulf? And the answer was, I'd seen this movie before. I was in charge of the Vulture's Picnic. I have another chapter about the investigation, the Exxon Valdez breakup 20 years ago, and I was the chief investigator of fraud and racketeering charges in that case. I worked with the natives who actually owned the shoreline. It wasn't just, people say it's wilderness. Well, someone lives there and owns that property. It was natives, the Chugach natives.
Yeah, before it was the natives of upstate New York, it's the natives of Alaska and other indigenous peoples throughout the world. And you've gotten onto these little planes and gone up there with the parka and talked to all these people. That's what's detailed in Vulture's Picnic.
Yeah, I get up to the Arctic after I get a message from the chief of intelligence of the Free Republic of the Arctic. Uh-huh. Go up to the Arctic Circle, and I thought it was a joke at first from, someone trying to pretend that they're one of Santa's elves, and it turns out it's from the great Eskimo hunter, Etok. So I did go up to the Arctic Circle to investigate. And what I was finding, for example, in the case of the Exxon Valdez, it wasn't Exxon's name was on the ship, but the real culprit was British Petroleum. And how did BP become the main culprit of the Exxon breakup? The answer is that ships do run aground, but you can stop the oil from flowing out if you put a bunch of rubber around the ship and then suck it out. It's like a rubber condom around a ship called boom. And BP had promised, BP was in charge, not Exxon, BP, which owns the Alaska pipeline and the shipping routes and most of the oil in Alaska. BP had promised to put this emergency equipment and rubber and the containments in the spill equipment, have spill teams like a fire department. You have a full 24-hour spill team. It was all supposed to be located on a place called Bly Island. That's where the Exxon Valdez hit. It's like having a fire in a trash can outside a fire station. It should have been taken care of in a minute, except that they lied. Nothing was out there. They made it all up. If you're just going to check in the tundra, it's just a bunch of Indians, as far as they were concerned, out there. And they were, by the way, the natives were supposed to man those emergency crews, and they fired them all secretly. It was BP. If BP hadn't lied, they literally signed papers saying the equipment was out there. It was a complete total fraud. Why would they do that? The answer is because a full oil spill prevention system costs about $2 billion, $3 billion. That's a lot of moolah to save. And they did the same game in the Gulf. They used the same plans, and they did the same thing because they don't pay. In the case of Alaska, as you see in Vulture's Picnic, they didn't pay a dime in Alaska. Exxon paid a few bucks. By the way, they didn't pay for 20 years. Most of the people whose lives were destroyed by that, the fishermen, the natives, were dead by the time the money came through. It was the U.S. Supreme Court knocked out 90% of the judgment, 90%, Bush's courts. And so Exxon paid little, and what no one noticed is that BP paid absolutely zero, nothing. That's why they did it in the Gulf again, because they knew that in the end, you know, we hear that, you know, the headline is that Obama got $20 billion out of BP. Ain't so, didn't happen. Fantasy Island, forget it. Hmm. And there was also one other little codicil in the deal with Obama, which said that if all payments by British Petroleum would come out of their profits from drilling in the Gulf. In other words, now the government has to make sure that they continue to drill in the Gulf.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's, you know, that's the sick stuff that they don't tell you. So as an investigative reporter, I mean, that's what I do. And I know the, you know, I know these characters. And I can't use the language of, you know, there's a, in fact, in charge of the fund, Obama and agreed to put a guy that I call the Wall Street Journal calls Mr. Fairness, a guy named Ken Feinberg. He's the guy that shafted the 9/11 workers out of their money, the asbestos workers out of their money, the Agent Orange victims out of their money. They've put in a guy who's, as I say, when the energy finance complex wants to screw the public, they use a screwdriver. And his name is Mr. Fairness, Ken Feinberg. He's their hitman. BP will not pay the $20 billion. They've only paid a fragment. Forget about it. They'll get away with it, and it locks them in to profits which are greater than that. I mean, they're basically they're guaranteed profits of drilling in the Gulf.
So there's like, you know, so in other words, instead of, so this is exactly, I mean, so the government that's supposed to be then turning around and say, hey, this went awry, now we're representing the public, that government has so little power in the situation and is so kind of colluded with it that, in fact, they're aiding and abetting what is going to be the next accident. So, you know, when we hear in New York State, this is like the place where you're about to catch the flu and maybe you're going to do something to prevent it or protect yourself. It's like, don't expect the government, which today in New York, this very month, the New York City, you know, saying 7 miles away from anything approaching our water, and now today they're saying, oh, well, but we actually meant to say 2 miles. We don't have any comparable geology anywhere in the world like ours where drilling has been done, so actually this is just guesswork. We have no real science to base it upon, but now we're suddenly saying 2 miles. And so that's like basically that could be viewed as a conceding bid. And then if there's a problem with this later, which they kind of were like, well, maybe if there's a problem later, we'll do something else, are they going to be in a position to do better for the public later after they've made this kind of concession? I don't think so, based on what we read in Vulture's Picnic and what you found out about this industry.
You know what? You watch those at the Super Bowl. At halftime, they had those commercials from BP, which is, they come on down to the Gulf Coast. It's all wonderful, and they show people eating shrimp. By the way, don't do that.
I haven't eaten any seafood.
Oh, my God, don't do that. If you actually saw the shrimp that was down there, not the stuff that they probably unfroze from Argentina for the commercial, nice and red pink. This stuff is coming out brown. I'm not kidding. Today. Here's what these characters do. These are the same guys that said that there was no way in the world that you would have a blowout if they were allowed to drill in deep water in the Gulf. It's the same guys. How many, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Exactly. Fool me twice, shame on me. I mean, come on. It's the same guys who said it couldn't happen. It's the same guys who said that the tanker route from Valdez would be completely safe. The chance, it is an infinitesimally small chance of a tanker crack up out in Alaska out of Valdez, and there it was. Okay? So it's the same guys. And they said if something goes wrong, we have ways to fix it and clean it up. Same guys. When do we stop saying, you know, how many times do they have to lie to us? And when I say lie, I use that advisedly. Remember, I was a fraud investigator before I was an investigative reporter, Allison. And when I say lie, let me explain, okay?
Mm-hmm.
In Vulture's Picnic, the Deepwater Horizon blows up, and I get a message from a ship floating in the Caspian Sea.
That's how the book begins. It's an amazing story.
Yeah, yeah, and it's on the other side of the planet, and I get this message. So I take off for Asia to investigate and arrive in what I call the Islamic Republic of BP, a place called Azerbaijan. Baku is the capital. I've mentioned that because Americans don't know the capitals of these nations until the 101st Airborne arrives there. So I thought I'd give you a heads up for the next oil war. So it's Baku. The information I had was that there was from the source, another blowout identical to the Deepwater Horizon blowout. It was another BP platform, Transocean, which also made the Deepwater Horizon platform, and it blew out for the same exact reason as the Gulf, which is this cheap crap cement that they use. It's called nitrogen-laced quickset cement, which was created by Halliburton.
Yeah, this is the same cement that goes into the pipes
that's
supposed to keep the chemicals and all the stuff out of the water aquifers when they drill. And of course, we know it doesn't. The same cement, trust us,
right.
It's safe. Yeah,
and they use this. They put nitrogen in it so it'll set quickly because you know the phrase. Watching cement dry. It takes a long time. You do it nature's way, which is the sun. So they speed it up with nitrogen. Unfortunately, you put in nitrogen. It's just like when you, if you put in laughing gas, you see the effect. You put nitrogen into cement, it creates bubbles and holes, and then the stuff explodes out in deep water. So what happened was, yes, that's what I found out in Asia. And that, in fact, there was another deep water drilling blowout exactly the same as the Gulf, and BP covered it up. Not just BP, they lied about it. Okay.
So this is the dress rehearsal for the Gulf oil spill that has, basically poisoned a large body of water, wiped out a whole bunch of businesses, towns, and industries, and created health problems for people along the Gulf, which, was buried. They buried it, and we're now told it's okay. Anyone, who's eating the seafood from there, because they covered that up too. Watch out. It's not the healthiest in the world, and I'm still waiting for the integrative health community to catch up on their fish recommendations based upon that little minor problem. So here you have what you're talking about, Greg, is like a dress rehearsal for exactly what happened here.
And instead of taking warning,
they hit it.
Right, they hit it. And here's the evil thing. What I find out in the book is that they go before the U.S. Congress and they lie and they say they've never had a problem with deep water drilling. 6 months before the Deepwater Horizon blows out, they don't mention what happened in Asia. Same thing. They cover it up. They lie. Now, was it just BP? Uh-uh. The other oil companies, because all these guys work as teams. They're all partners. So their partners like Exxon and Conoco and Chevron all knew about the Asian blowout. But they kept stum. They kept their lips sealed as well because they didn't want to be barred from drilling deep in the Gulf. And they covered up. And here's the deeply evil part. We know from the WikiLeaks memos now that the United States State Department knew. Condoleezza Rice personally received the cables that said that there was a blowout in the Gulf 2 years before the Deepwater Horizon, and she told no one, not the U.S. regulators, no one. It was kept silent. So the oil companies, American oil companies, BP, the U.S. State Department, and MI6 in Britain all knew about this. Now, I did this investigation for Channel 4 Britain, which is like the program like Frontline. But you see this all in Vulture's Picnic. The idea is to let you know what you haven't, by the way, seen on U.S. TV. That's why I'm so thrilled, Allison, that you and PRN are giving me this chance to put this material out, because it's been deep six totally in the U.S. media that this has happened before. And understand, it's not like some crazy side little unknown thing. This is, I do my reports for primetime television in the rest of the world. This was at this was played primetime in England, Germany, France, Italy, Switzerland.
Let's talk about that a little bit, Greg, because I think that's so important. You know, with the advent of the internet and blogging and social media, you know, everybody can kind of make their voice heard, and around every corner is a citizen journalist. And in fact, there's less and less tolerance, there's less and less support, and less investment in actual real professional journalism and journalists in this country. And even though I'm real happy that everybody kind of gets a way to be heard and have their say and talk in community, and I think it's a really great thing, and we do that and we encourage it. And, you know, I have a big Facebook community I do that with and everything. Still, there really is a difference, because what you do, which is going through years and years and mountains of files and maintaining them, which is traveling around the world, which is prevailing upon people who will lose their career and maybe even their life for being a silent whistleblower to talk to you. And by the way, if any are listening to this show, please do contact Greg, care of his website, gregpalace.com. But, you know, this is real. You are a model of really deep dish journalism, but what has happened in this country? You know, what happens? I mean, it's a crime and a shame. I mean, Deepwater Horizon happened here in our country, and it's like, Zippo, what's going on here in terms of the media and the press? I really would love your perspective on it.
Well, do you know how much an ad at the Super Bowl costs? You know, we're talking $500,000. I don't have that money. BP does. So BP can tell you that it's all clean. The Petroleum Broadcast System, PBS, ran a story, and I've even talked about this Vulture's Picnic. They ran a so-called investigation. They said, oh, the problem was it's not the problem with deep water drilling. It's not a problem with endless fraud committed by the oil industry. It's not a problem that they covered up that the Deepwater Horizon, because they covered up what happened 2 years earlier in the Caspian. That wasn't an accident. That was a homicide. And so they say, oh, well, it's just this problem of the BP culture. And they have a Chevron's president get up on the PBS program, this so-called investigative program, Frontline, and say, oh, well, yeah, bad BP, it wouldn't happen if it were Chevron. Hmm. And what they don't mention is that Chevron is the number one corporate donor, the official national sponsor of PBS. And they don't mention that at all. It's been bought. And that's the problem. The media has been totally bought, and you cannot. And I hear all these reporters say, oh, no one's ever called me up and said I can't report. And I said, have you ever tried? Have you ever really tried? You know, go ahead. Go take on BP or Chevron and see how long your job lasts. I can tell you this. In Vulture's Picnic, one of the guys I take on is a guy named Paul Singer. He's the number one donor to Mitt Romney.
Oh, boy.
And he is a billionaire. I didn't name him the Vulture. Paul the Vulture Singer has been called that by his own bankers in admiration for the work that he does in squeezing his financial victims. Well, I did a story on him for the BBC Nightly News, for Newsnight. And I went into the Congo, and I went into Bosnia, and I got the goods on these guys, that they were Buccaneers, international repo men who were basically, it's a complex flim-flam, but it involves, you'll see, involves Picnic, basically sucking up the money that we send these nations for things like education, AIDS, and they put it in their pocket. This is how this guy has made $4 billion. Now he's tithing to Romney. I did that report. The reason I bring this up is I did that report at Top of Nightly News, and Singer had one of his goons call my boss at BBC London and say, we have a file on Greg Palast. Now, BBC said, well, obviously he has a file on you, so you're even. And they weren't that impressed. But I got to tell you right now, if that happened and I was working with PBS or I was working with NBC, I would be toast as a reporter. I would be done. Plus, we got a legal threat from their lawyers. You do that in the U.S., and we severe libel laws in Britain, which we don't have in America. We have a First Amendment. But they're scared. Legal bills. And you know, I just told you I went to Asia. I went to the Arctic Circle. In Vulture's Picnic, I go into the Amazon. I mean, that's also very expensive reporting to get a story. It's a lot easier to have an oil company executive get up and talk about how they're quite green, isn't it?
Really?
That's cheap and easy. And plus, they'll give you what... Well, so many people don't realize that so much of our news are now VPNs, which is video press releases. I mean, basically, corporations provide pre-packaged film and programs all over the country. A lot of the stuff that you're seeing on TV has been produced by these corporations because, you know why? It's cheap. It's cheap. You're getting cheated just like any other product when they make the product cheaply. Well, when news is made cheaply, you two things. You get cheap news. And cheap news is dangerous because it's usually cheap because it's a lie.
Mm-hmm. And the man that has a file on you and you have a file on him, and you have a network that's standing up for you and wants to hear this and is supporting this reporting, that man is the guy who's bankrolling the Mitt Romney, whom he hopes to make the head of the United States, the president head. I mean, president isn't even maybe a, you know, talking head, the talking head of the United States. You know, and studies have shown that the more political ads there are, the more people will be brainwashed and go along and vote for that individual. So here are people who bought everything else and now they're, you know, buying the presidency. I'm sure they've done it in the past time or two. But so this becomes, you know, potentially, I mean, a dangerous climate for reporting if such an individual is saying that he's got a file on you. And, you know, so journalists, you know, you're a rare journalist with a lot of courage and really knowing how to do this and with the right backup. I mean, when I was at CBS, for example, I once proposed some program that would include Native Americans, and I was told, oh, we never, ever cover them because they talk too slow, you know. So there are things that are in, that are out, that are off, that are on, that you're supposed to cover, that you're never supposed to mention or go near. And, you know, people hoe the line. Or, you know, just in journalism, too, we have an environmental, prominent environmental reporter who shall be nameless, but who basically wrote in, you know, one of our very leading newspapers, the big problem with Fukushima is not the nuclear threat, it's the problem is that people are afraid.
Yes. Oh, yes. It's all about our perceptions, as if cancer is a perception. And that's exactly the problem, right? It's a PR problem that these guys have.
Right.
Well, you know, yeah.
You read that and you know that they're representing industry, but a lot of people don't. I mean,
well,
you know, recognize
fact,
that.
Yeah, and as you know, that's another one I take on is Fukushima in the book, because if there was ever a massive disinformation story, that was it. You know, we begin by getting Anderson Cooper standing up there with his supposed doctor, Sanjay Gupta, and they say, oh, well, the Fukushima plant, first they say, don't worry, it can't melt down because they have emergency diesel generators. So we didn't worry, and then it did melt down because the emergency diesel generators didn't work in the emergency. Then they said, don't worry, well, it's not really the fault of the power companies. Nothing's wrong with nuclear power. This was an unexpected earthquake. It was a 9.0 earthquake, and they didn't expect anything like that. Well, just a second, Ms. Anderson, Andy. It was a 9.0 earthquake in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. By the time it hit Fukushima, it wasn't 9.0. So what's going on here? Now, again, I was an investigator for government before I became an investigative reporter, and I have deep files. I go into my files, and I pull out something called the SQ report, seismic qualification. It's a private notebook of the engineers that worked on these plants. And one of those documents, which is, and I actually have a photo of it in Vulture's Picnic.
Yes.
One of the documents says, there is no way on Earth this plant can withstand an earthquake. That's the problem. The earthquake proofing testing has been faked. The diesel generator were also the testing was faked. Those diesel generators they're fakes. They might as well use, they could use Christmas tinsel. That's the PR. It's there to make you think that there's some type of emergency system. They say, oh, well, it was overwhelmed by a tsunami. No, it wasn't. Diesel generators were well behind the plant, and most of them cracked before water ever touched them, because they're just a bunch of old diesel generators from cruise ships, never meant to snap on in 12 seconds. They know it. I have the inside doctor. I actually put some of these, by the way, the earthquake issue, the faked earthquake test, the fake diesel test, I put that in front of a federal grand jury, but still, and the jury said, yeah, the company that did this committed racketeering, but no one fixed the problem. No one fixed the problem.
Yeah, people are scared. What's going on here? People are bought. People are scared. I mean, what is going on here?
The answer is yes. People are bought and people are scared. The guys who brought me the notebooks about the faking of the diesel generators and the faking of the earthquake proofing tests, which I put in front of a grand jury, they lost their jobs. They lost their careers. They were ruined. When I went to Asia to investigate what happened with the BP blowout there that they covered up, two of the witnesses I was trying to speak to disappeared. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether we'll ever hear from them again. This is really frightening stuff. The point was well made to those who then no one would talk to us, needless to say, and I can't blame anyone. And I had a guy from another nation, I won't even say what nation, was a witness who just said, there's no way I will speak even in shadow on camera, even with my voice changed. I can't. I will be destroyed. I mean, if you're lucky, your career is ruined. It is frightening. And then they buy. And then, yes, do they buy people up? It's sometimes direct cash. And I can tell you that in a way I'm lucky. I mean, they just keep me off the air. In fact, there's one chapter in there where I'm where they try to ruin me by setting
sex
me
scandal.
Up with a lovely young woman, and I was doing an undercover investigation as a young rising politician close to Tony Blair, and I thought, well, maybe I get more information if we had fewer clothes on and her husband walked in. That's okay, but then the Mirror newspaper with their reporters and cameramen were there, and they tried to ruin me with that. Again, see, if in the U.S. that would have been the end for me, but in Britain it was like, well, at least I got the story. I did get the story, and the story was about...
You know, it's so ridiculous anyway, because, yeah. I mean, we have a million problems to have to worry about that, you know,
yeah.
Honestly.
And that's the least
of a problem. You know, it's just, it's like, if they want to use it, they truck it out, and if they don't, they hide it, but it's going on in all directions in any case, not that it's wonderful or should be condoned or anything, but it's like, you know, in the order of priority, which is more important. One of the things that I just want to point people to here is, because always on this show I point people toward action, so I'm just going to just run through a couple of actions before we, you know,
sure,
kind of conclude out the show. So for one thing, you know, everybody read Vulture's Picnic. It not only has really the deep background that will give you a firm orientation to who we're dealing with, whether you're in a fracking region or whether you're just living in the United States and want to know who might be buying politicians in your area, I think it's a real must-read. And also I have to say that it's entertaining in conveying some of the heaviest stories and the most intense kind of information. It is actually a rocking read, and it's hilariously funny. I've been reading it on the New York City subway whenever I go anywhere, and I'm embarrassing myself constantly by, like, laughing out loud. It's so well-written and humorous. So look for Vulture's Picnic. Also, you can go to gregpalast.com, and that's P-A-L-A-S-T, you know, for more video footage of the book. As well, you know, if you are a whistleblower out there, if you're lurking within a governmental department and watching the bureaucratic kerfuffle, or within an industry and seeing that something isn't right, this is the guy to talk to. So I also want to urge that. And I also want to say you know, anyone in the Northeast region who thinks that someone else is going to be doing the yeoman's work of protecting the real future of New York City, because destroy our water, destroy our air quality, you know, completely contaminate our upstate food shed, and what is going to be, you know, we're going to be in a bad scramble. So don't just count on, you know, the little grassroots groups and the Josh Foxes and others of the world to do it for you. Help us out here, folks. UnitedForAction.org, WaterDefense.org, CatskillCitizensForSafeEnergy.org, DamascusCitizensForSustainability.org. You know, go to some of these organizations and open up your wallet, take action, support this. It's your water, too. And, you know, for more of this kind of blogging, radio shows, sign up at my website, healthjournalistblog.com. And now we're just going to return to Greg Palace now that I did our little ad. Is there anywhere else that, you know, you'd like to send people, Greg? Can they watch your Guardian shows? Or,
yeah, well,
you know, can
actually,
they watch your BBC shows? Like, where would they watch those?
Yes, well, actually, the one thing I'd suggest go to is vulturespicnic.org. Mm-hmm. Where you can, where it says excerpt, you can download the first chapter of the book and see for yourself what we're talking about here. And so vulturespicnic.org, but it also has a lot of the, if you go in something called the file cabinet, it has a lot of inside documents. I spend a lot of time digging out inside confidential secret documents, whether it's the World Bank, WTO, Treasury Department, British Petroleum. And then there's films that do go with the... it says the films that do go with each chapter of the book. And so you can follow along. When I talk about being inside a whale in the Arctic, you can go inside the whale with me. And so it'll give you, and by the way, Willie Nelson's provided some music for me and some other good people like Boots Riley. But so vulturespicnic.org, so you get a feel for getting inside this story. And that's really important, because you have to feel this story. You hear, well, yeah, they lie to us, and we kind of know that. But I want you to know, if you think these guys are bottom-dwelling scum, that's their good side. and once you get to know them, you realize what kind of vultures we're dealing with. You know, I mean, when I talk, the title is Vultures Picnic, but, you know, I mean, and let's remember, it's We're the Lunch. They vultures feast when people and nations die, and that's how these guys make their money. They make their money when we lose. It's, you know, they are not wealth creators. They're economic corpse chewers.
So the idea that some people misguidedly have, that we put them in charge, they're great heroes, and it's all going to trickle down from them to us, and, you know, if we just let them have free reign, we will follow suit, and we too will, you know, be able to benefit indirectly as it trickles down. What do you have to say to that idea, which has really been widely promulgated in a lot of poorly informed people?
Yeah, well, I'm not crazy about it. I've never been crazy about people trickling on me, and I would say that one of the things is in the book we talk about how they let the pipelines blow up, they let the Deepwater Horizon blow up, and it does save them money in the long run. Believe me, if they had to really run safe systems, or they would be prevented from the drilling. If they promised, you know, that we hear it again and again. And this is the problem. We now have this idea that these are wealth creators. I think that's why Paul Singer called up and threatened my boss. I think he wants to change the book from Vulture's Picnic to Wealth Creator's Picnic. And this is the new mythology that somehow these finance vultures are investing in creating jobs. And it's quite offensive. I think teachers who teach people skills create jobs. I think that people that run the corner grocery store and provide you something and then spend their own money in the community, that creates jobs. We are not creating jobs by speculating. For example, I talk about Koch Industries, where I did an investigation with the FBI where Charles and David Koch made over $100 million by skimming oil off the Osage Indian Reservation, which they didn't pay for. They had a contract to take oil, and they would send out their trucks to pick up a few hundred barrels of oil. It would take 200 barrels of oil, and they would write down 100. And they skimmed over $100 million of oil. They got caught and filmed by the FBI. And they still. And the FBI, with the Justice Department, wrote up criminal indictments of these people. And not just people in the Koch organization. Charles Koch himself personally ordered the theft. Now, you have to understand, he was already a billionaire. Here he's taking a few hundred dollars from each Native American family. And one of his executives said, why are you doing this? Why are you taking like a few hundred bucks from each of these natives? You're already worth a few billion. So why are you doing this? And listen, Charles Koch said, and this is on the tape recording, we had this guy wired, I want what's coming to me. And that's everything. And that's all. And he said, I want everything, all of it. And that's their attitude. And so, and now how many jobs did that create, stealing the natives' oil? I suppose, when you steal oil, it does take some infrastructure. But, it's the theft. I'm sorry. I'm not going to congratulate the theft when Mitt Romney says the Republican Party should celebrate success. He's talking about his $250 million in wealth. I think if you, like on your show, you show people how to become healthy, and you have extended someone's life or make them feel better and live a better life, I think that's success. I don't feel like you've not been a success. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but maybe you have made $250 million speculating in the market and
on herbal supplements. No, I'm just kidding.
but what I'm saying, it's a very odd measure of success. They don't mean celebrate success. They mean celebrate wealth and right. Any way you can get it.
Right.
No questions asked. And I talk about that, and I talk about the guys who make it from insider trading, etc. It's all inside because they fixed the system, and that's the whole point of Vulture's Pick. So to actually let you know, one thing I want to do in the book is, of course, name the 1%. We talk about the 1% of the rich guys, and we get to know some names like Koch. I really want people to understand who they are. Name these names. Meet their trophy wives, and really actually know who they are and how they actually make their money. So it's not just like, gee, they got a lot and that's unfair. That's crucial to me. So you know how they got it. You know that British Petroleum didn't make its money by going out and finding oil, but by bribing, threatening, and beatings. And that's what the B is in BP.
Well, this is really eye-opening. Thank you so much, Greg Palast, for being with me today on Connect the Dots, the author of Vulture's Picnic. Definitely a must-read book for anybody who really wants a big-picture orientation, but with all of the brilliant, finely honed, and carefully researched detail of one of the best investigative journalists of our time. So happy to have you with us today and Connect the Dots. And readers, definitely check out Vulture's Picnic, as well as go to vulturespicnic.org for some of his terrific BBC footage and coverage, where you can really see Greg all over the world doing his investigation and interacting with people, so that we can really put a face to the name and really see the human being behind the kind of evil doing, or whatever we want to call it. Definitely doing. And also, I just want to reiterate again, these are the folks, this is the same industry. One of the things that Greg said, which I found so incredibly interesting, is the fact that, people like Paul Singer, other people who are vultures depicted in the book, like to consider themselves wealth creators. And actually, the chairman of Chesapeake Oil, which is really the company behind the big push rush forward with hydraulic fracturing without doing proper health, socioeconomic or environmental impact studies, also has said, you know, oh, the environmentalists are just naysayers and we're wealth creators. But, you know, the question is, who are you creating the wealth for? You know, more and more we see that the wealth isn't recycling back in. So, you know, we give the planet oil, you know, we create potential enormous environmental risks. We use up water supplies. We poison the very life essentials we need, all to create wealth, but for whom? You know, we can, it's getting clearer and clearer that, that this is not to benefit the 99% most of us. So in terms of that, I really want to urge you, anyone who's employed and cares about these issues, to contribute to the organizations that I mentioned earlier in the program. Everyone can go there to sign up for actions, and I also put a lot of actions that you can stay on top of on my Facebook page. You can sign up and connect with me at Connecting the Dots for Health on Facebook or my name page. You can also follow me on Twitter and on my website, healthjournalistblog.com, as well as the Huffington Post. So get involved, stay active, inform yourself, read Vault Picnic, and come back next week to join me again for another edition of Connect the Dots, here with you every Saturday at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Mm-hmm.